You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller, featuring Smitten Kitchen and PaleoRunningMama.com. We're going to start off with PaleoRunningMama.com, a new site for me here, for salmon BLT salad with chive ranch dressing. This is Paleo, Whole 30, and keto friendly. This salmon BLT salad is a favorite family for our family and perfect for summer grilling or any time of the year. Perfectly seasoned salmon is either pan fried or grilled and layered with greens, crispy bacon, avocados, and tossed in a Whole 30 compliant chive ranch dressing. It's paleo, low carb, and keto friendly too. Who's a fan of crispy skin on salmon? I remember realizing I could actually cook salmon with a skin on, and it was life-changing. I've been borderline obsessed ever since. For this recipe, you can cook the salmon either with or without the skin. I know not everyone shares my crispy skin obsession. Either way, this salad is definitely going to become a favorite. Flavorful seasoned salmon that you can pan-fry or grill, crispy bacon, greens, avocado, onions, and tomatoes, plus a tangy chive dressing that's totally dairy-free, Whole 30 compliant, and paleo, and you can whisk together in less than a minute. So here's what you need to make this salmon BLT salad. Simple, delicious ingredients and the perfect spices make this salmon BLT salad out of this world delicious. Here's what you'll need to prepare. For the dressing, unsweetened almond milk, paleo mayo, this can be homemade or store-bought, lemon juice, dill, garlic, chives, sea salt, and black pepper. For the salmon, you'll need individual salmon fillets, skin on or off, up to you, garlic powder, onion powder, smoked paprika, a teaspoon of black pepper, bacon fat, avocado oil, or ghee. For the salad, you'll need mixed greens of your choice, cherry tomatoes, bacon cooked until crisp, avocado, and red onion. So pat the fillets dry with a paper towel, and in a small bowl, mix together all of the seasonings. You can make the salmon on the stovetop, in a skillet, or on the grill. If you're grilling, brush generously all over with the oil before beginning. If you're pan frying, the oil is for the skillet. Heat the grill or skillet to medium-high heat. Add the oil to the skillet, and then place the salmon skin side down, if you choose skin, and cook about 3 minutes on each side, adjusting for preference and thickness. If grilling, brush grill with oil and place the salmon flesh slide down on the hot grill. Cook about 3 minutes, then carefully flip and cook the skin side down for another 3 to 4 minutes, adjusting for thickness and preference. Remove to a plate and assemble the salad. Layer the greens with tomatoes, bacon, sliced avocado, and red onion, and place the salmon on top. Drizzle all over with as much of the dressing as you like and garnish with extra chives if desired. Here's how you make the dairy-free ranch dressing. I use a base layer of paleo mayo and unsweetened almond milk. The almond milk keeps it drizzly. I use coconut milk when I'm doing a dip, coconut cream actually. Whisk together the almond milk, the mayo, lemon juice, and dill until smooth, and then stir in the garlic and chives, and then season to taste with sea salt and black pepper. It's that simple and oh so tasty. You may have a little bit more dressing than you need, but it's definitely always better to have more than not enough. If you want to keep any extra dressing for another use, place it in a sealed jar or container in the refrigerator for up to 4 days. So if you're ready for a delicious salad with lots of protein, healthy fats, and of course tons of flavor, let's go. There it is, the Paleo Whole 30 Salmon BLT Salad. Here's the actual recipe. This is the family favorite, perfect for summer grilling or any time of the year. Perfectly seasoned salmon is either pan-fried or grilled and layered with crispy greens and crispy bacon and avocados and tossed in a Whole30 compliant ranch dressing. For the dressing, you'll need 1/4 cup of plain unsweetened almond milk, 1/4 cup of paleo mayo, 1 tablespoon lemon juice, 1 teaspoon of fresh minced dill, or 1/4 teaspoon of dried, 1 garlic clove minced, 2 tablespoons of chopped chives, sea salt, and black pepper to taste. For the salmon, you'll need 1 pound individual salmon fillets with the skin on or off. That's about 3 to 4 fillets. 3/4 teaspoon of garlic powder, 3/4 teaspoon of onion powder, 3/4 teaspoon of smoked paprika, 3/4 teaspoon of sea salt, 1/8 teaspoon of black pepper, and 1 tablespoon of bacon fat or avocado oil or ghee. For the salad, you'll need about 6 cups of mixed greens, roughly chopped, 1 cup of cherry tomatoes, halved, 6 slices of bacon cooked until crisp and crumbled or chopped, 1 medium avocado thinly sliced, and 1 small red onion thinly sliced. For the dressing, you're going to whisk together the almond milk, mayo, lemon juice, and dill until smooth, and then stir in the garlic and chives, and season to taste with the sea salt and black pepper. For the salmon, pat the fillets dry with a paper towel, and in a small bowl, mix together all of the seasonings. You can make the salmon on the stovetop, in a skillet, or on the grill. Heat the grill or skillet to medium-high heat. Add oil to the skillet. In a skillet, place the salmon skin side down, if you choose skin, and cook for about 3 minutes on each side, adjusting for preference and thickness. If you're grilling, brush the grill with oil and place the salmon flesh side down on the hot grill. Cook about 3 minutes and then carefully flip and cook skin side down for another 3 to 4 minutes, adjusting for thickness and preference. Remove to a plate and assemble the salad. Layer the greens with tomatoes, bacon, sliced avocado, and red onion, and place the salmon on the top. Drizzle all over with as much of the dressing as you like and garnish with the extra chives if desired. Serve right away and enjoy. Next, we've got a recipe from smittenkitchen.com for spinach and artichoke pan pizza. Over the pandemic, I quietly broke up with every pizza dough recipe I've shared to date. I know I have some nerve only telling you this now. The family wanted pizza for dinner weekly, and I was overdue for a homemade pizza reckoning. Why? Because after years of trying to get my home oven even half as hot as the ones at the pizzerias that crank out gloriously blistered and glistening pies, and too often end up with disappointing textures, I finally realized I was chasing the wrong pizza dream. Instead of fighting an uphill battle, I replaced my usual pizza dough with a no-knead focaccia-ish dough that bakes up beautifully in a regular oven, perfectly every single time. The crust is tender and stretchy with deeply golden and crisp olive oil edges. A longer baking time allows the toppings to brown and blister without burning the whole pizza. Plus, it holds toppings, even a generous amount of toppings, like a charm, without them collapsing the dough or causing watery puddles. From here, the fun began with everything from the Angry Mom Grandma Pizza in Smitten Kitchen Keepers, my third cookbook, to this. A couple of weeks ago, I spotted a gorgeous spinach and artichoke pizza with spinach pesto, artichoke hearts, and a blistered and blissful amount of cheese on Notfulo's Instagram. And I couldn't think about anything else till I made it myself. Like previous times when I've been enthralled enough by a photo enough to chase it, I didn't have a recipe to work from. I just played around until I made a pizza that tasted as good as the photo looked to me. I love the classic spinach and artichoke combination, but even more so when it's not swallowed up by a vat of cream and cheese. Here you can actually taste the vegetables too. But nothing could have prepared me for my son choosing it over the classic tomato cheese pie I also made and declaring that if Joe's had this by the slice, I'd get it every time. Joe, call me. Here's the recipe. Spinach and artichoke pan pizza. The crust looks yummy, by the way. The focaccia, I think, is a really yummy, crispy way to go. This serves 4. It takes 3 hours with rising time, and the source is right here at Smitten Kitchen. This pizza dough is adapted from a focaccia dough, and my favorite comes from Alexandra Stafford. I wrote about the focaccia in her first book in 2018. Guess what? Next Tuesday, her second cookbook, Pizza Night, comes out, and it's all about pizza. Pizza for home cooks without special equipment. I am wildly excited about it. You should order yourself a copy. Note, I almost always double the dough and make two pieces at once because any leftovers reheat fantastically, but I wrote the recipe for just one. You'll have enough spinach pesto for two pizzas, however. I've spread extra on a thick slice of toasted sourdough and covered it with a cloud of micro-planed Parmesan, like I had at Sailor a couple of weeks ago. For the dough, you'll need 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of instant yeast, 1 teaspoon of kosher salt. I use Diamond brand kosher salt. Use half of other brands. 1 cup of lukewarm water. That's about 100 to 115 degrees Fahrenheit. 1 tablespoon of olive oil. For the spinach pesto, you'll need 2 thick or 3 thin scallions, thinly sliced, 2 garlic cloves minced, 4 ounces of spinach leaves and baby spinaches fine, and then red pepper flakes to taste and some olive oil. For the assembly, you'll need 1 14-ounce can of quartered artichoke hearts, drained and patted dry, zest and juice from half a lemon, 6 ounces of mozzarella diced from a block or perlini, 1/2 cup of grated Parmesan, and 1/2 cup of grated Fontina or Asiago cheese. To make the dough, in a large bowl, you're going to whisk together the flour, salt, and yeast, and the water and olive oil, and use a spoon or dough whisk to bring it together, stirring the mixture a few times to ensure that there are no unmixed pockets of flour. Cover the bowl with plastic wrap and let it rise until it doubles and moves a lot when jiggled, about 1.5 to 2 hours at room temperature. If you won't need the dough until later, you can transfer it to the fridge a little before it's fully doubled and let it finish there for a few hours or overnight. Assemble the pizza. You're going to heat your oven to 450 degrees Fahrenheit and coat a 12-inch round cast iron skillet or a 9x13 cake pan with 2 to 3 tablespoons of olive oil. Scrape the dough into the pan, then turn it over once so that it's oiled on both sides. Dip your fingers in the oil to coat them and dimple the dough out to the edges as best as you can. It's okay if it doesn't fully stretch at this point. Set it aside, loosely covered, for 30 minutes to finish proofing. Meanwhile, make the spinach pesto. In a food processor or a high-speed blender, combine the scallions and garlic. Add spinach and pulse the machine until it's well chopped, and then drizzle in olive oil until the mixture looks thick but loosened. Usually it needs 4 to 6 tablespoons. And season well with salt and red pepper flakes to taste. To assemble, being careful not to deflate the dough, use oiled fingers to gently dimple the dough out to the edges of the pan if it's not there already. Spoon half of the spinach pesto mixture over the dough and use the back of the spoon to gently spread it out. The toppings should go all the way to the pan's edge when making this pizza, i.e. do not leave an empty border. Arrange the artichoke hearts over the spinach pesto and then finally grate some of the lemon zest over. Sprinkle the mozzarella, Parmesan, and Fontina, and then season the pizza with salt, red pepper flakes, and a little more lemon zest. Then bake the pizza for 25 to 30 minutes until deeply golden brown at the edges and toasty on top. Yes, this baking time and temperature is correct. It sounds very long, but I've made 100 of these pizzas and always regret it when I take it out before 30 minutes as the edges have a less satisfying crunch. To serve, you're going to finish with the lemon juice. You can serve it right in the pan, but I prefer to protect my knives and loosen the pizza from the pan and slide it onto a cutting board before cutting it into wedges or squares. As far as do-ahead, leftovers reheat fantastically. I heat leftover slices on a foil-covered sheet pan at 350 degrees to 375 degrees for 15 minutes. The leftover spinach pesto keeps for up to 5 days in the fridge. That sounds delish. Next, we're going to go for a recipe that's called herbed summer squash and potato tort. Oh, that looks so good. This poor thing isn't going to be winning any beauty pageants, and especially not in the rushed, oh my gosh, it's 10 p.m., why aren't you ready yet the way I cooked it? But this tort should not be underestimated. It's some delicious stuff, and personally, I think it looks just fine. Though this is far from the most pitiful offender on the cooking backlog list, I still won't admit how many weeks ago I made this. However, I do remember that I had a hankering for potatoes that week, and not just any potatoes, but Yukon Golds. As Alex always says, my cravings come with very specific instructions. But summer doesn't seem the right time, our typical preparation, chunked and roasted until brown with salt, pepper, and olive oil. And this tort, cut with yellow summer squash, is lighter and perfect, especially served right from the oven with a green or tomato salad. If you're like me, you're probably going to look at the recipe and think, doesn't that sound a little bland? And sound is the choice descriptor here, because this is anything but, and the secret is that it's perfectly seasoned. There are few better homages to the value of the right level of seasoning, salt and pepper both, than the depth that this recipe gets out of relatively simple ingredients. Here's the recipe, herbed summer squash and potato tort. This serves 8 in generous wedges, and this is adapted from Bon Appetit from June 2001. You're going to need 1 bunch of green onions, thinly sliced, 1 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, 2 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, 1 tablespoon of chopped fresh thyme leaves, kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper, 2 pounds of Yukon Gold potatoes, unpeeled, cut into very thin rounds, and 12 ounces of any green or yellow zucchini or other summer squash, cut into very thin rounds, and 2 tablespoons of olive oil. You're going to heat your oven to 375 degrees Fahrenheit and prepare your pan. You're going to line a deep 10 to 11 inch oven-proof skillet or cast iron pan or cake pan with a large round of parchment paper, pressing it against the bottom and pleating it up the sides. You're going to prepare your filling by setting aside one quarter cup of sliced green onions. Toss the remaining green onions and all the Parmesan, flour, thyme, 1.5 teaspoons of kosher salt, and lots of freshly ground pepper, that'll be about 3/4 of a teaspoon, into a medium bowl to blend. Then you're going to assemble the tort. Layer 1/3 of the potatoes in concentric circles in the bottom of your prepared pan, overlapping them slightly. Layer 1/2 of squash in concentric circles atop the potatoes, and then drizzle with 2 teaspoons of oil and sprinkle with 1/3 of the cheese mixture. Repeat with 1/3 of the potatoes, 1/2 of the squash, 2 teaspoons of oil, and 1/3 of the cheese mixture. And then top with the last 1/3 of potatoes, drizzle with the remaining 2 teaspoons of oil, and sprinkle with the remaining cheese mixture, and press gently to flatten. Then you'll bake the tort by covering the pan tightly with foil or with a lid if your pan has one, and bake for 45 to 50 minutes or until the potatoes are almost tender. Remove the foil or lid and bake another 30 to 35 minutes until the tort is browned on top and the potatoes are tender. To serve, you're going to let cool for 10 minutes in the pan, then use the sling of a parchment paper to lift the tort out of the pan and onto a serving plate or a cutting board. Sprinkle with the reserved green onions, cut into 8 wedges, and eat right away. As far as doing ahead, the tort can be made in advance and kept chilled in the fridge until needed. To rewarm, you're going to cover again with foil or a lid and place in a 350 degree oven until heated through, about 30 minutes. P.S. I think this is even better reheated because there's something about potatoes that have been cooked twice. They get more browned at the edges and more tender inside, creating an excellent contrast. As far as some notes, there's some 2023 updates. Originally, this tort was made in 2 8-inch cake pans, and while they're cute and petite, since 2012, I've been making it as one larger summer centerpiece-worthy tort, usually in a 10-inch cast iron or other oven-proof skillet. In 2023, I finally photographed it as such and updated the recipe to reflect it. Next, we're going to have a recipe for Hamantaschen. Sure, we're a couple days late on these this year, but I couldn't let Purim weekend, see how I've added 2 days to the holiday there? Brilliant. Pass without one more chapter in my annual attempt to make Hamantaschen that suit my fancy. Was I more successful this year than last? Only slightly. But this has in no way made them less enjoyable. Living in New York City, I sometimes forget that the rest of the world isn't aware of Jewish holidays and foods the way that here they are here, where babka and challah are bakery staples and admirable efforts at Hamantaschen are available year-round at diners and coffee shops. So, for a quick review, Hamantaschen are three-cornered cookies typically filled with jams or poppy seed paste and eaten during the Jewish holiday of Purim. Their shape is modeled after the three-corner hat purported to be worn by the holiday's villain, Haman. I always think of the holiday as kind of a Jewish Mardi Gras, replete with carnivals, costumes, and a good amount of libations. A fun reprieve from the fall's more somber high holidays. To keep them kosher, most Hamantaschen recipes call for oil or margarine instead of butter. But seeing as we are not, I've been on what seems a never-ending hunt for a buttery, richer version. It's important that the walls do not slump in the oven, so a dough more firm than your average shortbread is required, but one that hopefully does not veer into the bland or crunchy hard zone. The bit that fails my efforts each time, however, is trying to keep the corners together in the oven. For some reason, every time my efforts hit the heat, they just sigh and sprawl out like a cat taking a nap in the sunniest spot of the living room. This year was no different, leading me to concur that it's time for me to either begin twisting and pinching the corners or adhering them with some egg wash. Fortunately, I was able to salvage a few, but not that there were any complaints from the smitten kitchen tasters. But all of these notes will have to be tucked away for next year, as just 12 hours after taking these mostly pancaked Hamantaschen out of the oven, I was baking for the next delicious holiday, Easter. Here's the recipe for the Hamantaschen. I loved using a little cream cheese in the dough to give it a little more flavor and tenderness. Be sure to seal the corners well. Hamantaschen pancakes are much harder to pack in a tin. This is going to yield about 22 2-inch cookies. You need 8 tablespoons of unsalted butter, softened, 3 ounces of cream cheese at room temperature, 3 tablespoons of sugar, 1 egg, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1/2 teaspoon of orange zest, 1 1/3 cups plus 4 teaspoons flour, 1/4 teaspoon salt, various jams. We used raspberry, blackberry, and apricot, but my favorite is this stuff, and there's a link at smittenkitchen.com, or prepared fillings, such as poppy seed or prune pastry filling. Cream butter and the cream cheese together until smooth, and then add the sugar and mix for 1 minute longer, then egg, vanilla extract, orange zest, and salt, mixing until combined, and then finally add the flour. The mixture should come together and be a tad sticky. If it feels too wet, then add an additional tablespoon of flour. Form the dough into a disc and wrap in plastic and refrigerate for at least an hour. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. To form the Hamantaschen, you're going to roll out the dough on a well-floured surface until it's about 1/4 inch thick. Use a round cookie cutter, 3 inches is traditional, but very large. I used one that was 2.5 inches. And cut the dough into circles. Spoon a teaspoon of your filling of choice in the center, and then fold the dough in from 3 sides and firmly crimp the corners and give them a little twist to ensure that they stay closed, leaving the filling mostly open in the center. Bake on a cookie sheet lined with parchment paper and bake until golden brown, about 20 minutes. Cool on racks and resist the urge to try a still hot one unless a jambert tongue is as much of your Purim tradition as are these cookies. I'd prefer not. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.